Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company. Serving collectors since 1945.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey y'all, this is Josiah Gray, and this is Half Street High Heat. Hope you enjoy today's episode.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Half Street High Heat. And it's an episode that feels like old times because we've spent the past like 5 minutes trying to start the episode, but we're just laughing about what we were talking about off air, which I will not disclose, but maybe we'll like post it as a Patreon episode or something if you really want to find out the
OnlyFans.
Yeah. The behind the scenes details of why we're so giggly to start this episode. But I am Nick. You can follow me on Twitter at Coach Moose. I am joined by my lovely co-hosts Ryan and Amanda. You can follow them on Twitter at We Are All Shack and at AWhite7877. And of course, follow the show at Half Street High Heat. What's going on?
Not too much. Busy week. It's my daughter's birthday today.
No, happy birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you. She's getting really old. She's 5 now.
Wow.
My youngest, my little one. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Busy and ready for baseball. I'm excited about the World Baseball Classic. I'm excited about spring training. I'm excited about the season starting.
Wow. So she's 5 years old. It's almost time to have another one, isn't it?
You know what? You shut your mouth. You shut your mouth. I would throw myself off a building.
Yeah, because that's what your daughter wants to hear on her 5th birthday.
Yeah. No, I can't. I am. I'm 45 years old. I feel like there should come a point where, like, no, seriously, it's not okay. Like, I would have a heart attack.
You know, Amanda.
No more for me.
It was actually, like, in my mind, you're still 42. I don't know if that makes you feel good
it
or
does.
Bad.
Yeah,
it's 33 to me.
Aww, but like, that's sweet.
We started this podcast when you're 42, so like, yeah. I make Nelson Cruz jokes because he's like 42, but you're like 45.
Yeah, and I always used to say, like, you know, between Tom Brady and Nelson Cruz and me, we were like representing the 42 cohort pretty well.
Right, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
But I think we should be putting the baby pressure on you. You're the one who's married with no kids, so.
Ryan, what's going on with you?
Doubling, give it to the next person.
Exactly.
I just discovered that Rocket Power is on Paramount Plus. You know, there really are two different people in life, based on these conversations everyone's having here. I just discovered Rocket Power is on Paramount Plus. Absolutely excited. Time zones, those are fun because World Baseball Classic is here.
Oh yeah,
absolutely excited. China plays at 5 a.m. our time, and then also plays at 11 p.m. our time. Two games in one day. Who doesn't love that? The beauty of time zones. They confuse the hell out of me. But I'm excited because World Baseball Classic's here. It's fun. It's great. All the teams are playing different countries. I think the Nats play Israel today. And that's going to be fun because the Braves got the Dominican Republic. They got worked. So hey, you know, maybe that's might surprise some people. But World Baseball Classic's fun. You guys should really pay attention to it. Three teams, absolutely great. Venezuela may surprise people, don't care about that. But yeah, baseball's back.
Yeah, that's gonna be fun. I'm struggling with the time zones myself. I'm
Oh, God, I like sit on my couch, start doing math. I'm like, okay, 5 a.m. and there's 13 hours ahead.
And one more question before we move on. What is rocket powers that you're not
like, no, are you joking?
No, I'm not.
I thought for sure that would be one you knew.
Yeah. No. Do you know like Rugrats?
Yes.
Same era.
Yeah. Yeah, same era, same time. Oh, just not a Nickelodeon cartoon. Yeah.
But it is.
Yeah, I was a little, yeah, 10. It's a little past my time.
Top 10. What did you watch as a kid?
Thundercats, He-Man, G.I. Joe.
Oh, I love G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
Oh man, so good. So good. No, and actually when my older kids were little, we bought like DVDs of all of the seasons of those, and that's why I don't know some of the shows that were like popular when they were little, because we made them watch like Thundercats and He-Man and all the stuff that we watched. Because we were like, damn if I'm not gonna relive my childhood.
Right. And that's the thing with streaming. It sounds like Ryan's going through that now, and I've certainly gone through it. It's like now with every like parent network, like Nickelodeon's Viacom that has like MTV and stuff like that, and obviously Disney Plus, like all these streaming or all these parent companies getting streaming services, like all of our childhood cartoons are coming to streaming and like rewatching them, and we're just like, oh really, we like this? But then some of the other stuff we're like, oh yeah, this is awesome. I see.
Yeah, some of it holds up and some of it really doesn't. Yeah,
right. So
all right, cool. Well, no, I had no file on that one, but congrats, I guess.
Worth the watch. Rocket Power, definitely top 10 Nickelodeon show, arguably top 5. Nickelodeon had some bangers, a lot of bangers. All right, but tonight we will be continuing on with our division preview episode. Tonight we are covering the AL Central, so Guardians, White Sox, Twins, Tigers, Royals, in that order. Talk about, it's kind of some like interesting teams, but not in the sense that they're going to be like dark horse contenders. It's like, as Nats fans, a lot of these teams kind of stick out to me, because it's, are we going to be, you know, like the Royals after they won the World Series, or are we going to be the Twins where we kind of fluctuate? It's just kind of an interesting conversation, and different paths the Nats could conceivably take should they, you know, figure their crap out over the next couple of years. But before we get into that, I want to reintroduce a segment that we had prior to our hiatus, and that is the quick pitch. So speaking of quick pitch, a little bit timely, but I wanted to get your guys' take on the pitch clock. Obviously, we've seen it in spring training. We've seen Max Scherzer try to weaponize it. We've seen other pitchers and teams get dinged for it. And it goes both ways. It's not just pitchers. It's the hitters getting, you know, dinged by it too. So I wanted to get your guys' takes, you know, super early in spring training. We haven't obviously seen it applied to a real MLB game yet, but just early thoughts and opinions on the pitch clock.
That is a good question. I struggle with it, because in some ways I love it. You know, it really does speed up, like more than any of the other dumb things they've tried over the past few years to speed up games. Like this one really is working to speed up games. But I feel like it's like the pitching is maybe a little bit sloppy, because guys aren't like taking the amount, and maybe that will clean itself up as people get more used to it. But I don't love the part about the batter having to be in the box looking at the pitcher when it hits eight. To me, like if you're not in the box and the pitcher has to pitch, then like he can just pitch, and if you're not there, it's a strike. But I don't like the whole, like there was that one, was it a Braves game, the one that ended like a 3-2 count in the bottom of the ninth?
Yeah, it was like I know it was the Red Sox. I don't know who the other team was, but
it was Red Sox Braves. It was the first spring training. Yeah, it was the first spring training game of the year.
Yeah, I just, you know, that kind of thing. Like, I don't like to see, I don't like the thought of seeing games end that way. And another idea I heard somebody throw out was like that maybe the pitch clock, maybe you don't do it in the ninth inning. You know what I mean? Or so it can't decide the outcome of a game.
Yeah,
which I thought was an interesting idea.
Maybe not on like a 2-strike count or a full count. Certainly, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like they need to tweak it, because it feels a little bit rushed. Like, I don't know if maybe they make it a little bit longer, and maybe it's just a matter of not only the pitchers and the batters getting used to it, but we as viewers getting used to it. But I guess I'm a little ambivalent. I kind of like it and I kind of hate it.
Yeah. I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I like it. I wasn't sure how I'd feel about it, but I do think it helps. And you know, I'm sure everyone has pretty much seen the clip of, I don't know if it was Pitching Ninja or someone else with the Cubs pitcher. I can't remember who it was, where he takes like 4 minutes to throw a pitch or whatever. And, yeah. You know, they're like, how many inside the park home runs can happen during this clip or, you know, whatever it was. But yeah. Oh no, it was someone pitched a full inning and got three outs before the guy threw the next pitch. So that's obviously a very extreme case of it, but I do think the pitch clock helps. I just want it to be tweaked a little bit because early spring training and spring training games always go much quicker and more efficient than MLB games. But you're talking about like games that are closer to 2 hours than three. And if you actually go to the game, nobody really cares about how long the game is. Obviously there's games that really drag on, but those are few and far between. Typically it's pretty well paced, and I don't want to have a 2 hour game. Like my travel league games last longer than 2 hours sometimes. And it's like, once you're there and enjoying baseball,
that's a really good point. I hadn't really thought about is the length when you're at this, like, I don't want to schlep my whole damn family down to DC to watch a baseball game and have it be over in 2 hours.
Right. And someone made the point.
Like, I plan on that being like an afternoon.
Right. And someone made the point, and I wish I remembered the handles I could give credit, but like, I think we will see a tweak mainly because of beer sales and concession sales. Like, you have to cut off at the seventh inning stretch. If the seventh inning stretch is like an hour and a half into the game, like, you're going to miss out on a lot of profit because, you know, that's almost half of the time that you would normally be selling concessions and alcohol and whatnot. So I do think we see a tweak, but as far as the rule itself, I like it. I think I just want it to be a little bit longer, like 5 seconds longer, and I think I would be okay. But it just feels really rushed and like kind of gives me anxiety watching it. I'm like, oh my God, step in the box. Like, you know, I want it to still have like a natural pace to it and not be forced.
Yeah, agree. What do you think, Ryan?
Oh, I love it. It's the greatest thing Rob Manfred's ever done. It is honestly what baseball is needed. There are way too many people who just take forever to pitch, and it's annoying as hell. It loses interest for people who are there. It loses interest for people watching at home. And I think it's one of the best things that Rob Manfred's done. And to completely honest with you, I haven't heard a single good argument against it. I think people are complaining just because it's change, and people do not like change, especially baseball fans do not like change. I think it's absolutely incredible. And they're working through the tweaks of it right now. That's expected. It's spring training. Let all this stuff happen now because it's spring training. It quite literally does not matter if another guy gets an extra strike because he took a little bit too long. It's spring training. Who cares? And I saw a stat. If you watched all 162 of your team's games last year, you would have spent 494 hours watching baseball. With the new rule, it's been cutting game times by 20 minutes, league average right now, 20 minutes faster. Congratulations. You have an extra 54 hours of your life back. What are you going to do with it?
I feel like watching baseball for 494 hours a season is something that I aspire to.
What's the current state of the Nats? Do you?
I didn't say the Nats. I said baseball.
That's what MLB TV is for.
And like, what am I going to do with the extra 54 hours? Like, spend time with my family? Yeah, right.
I know, right?
Cry.
So, Ryan, would you keep it as it is, or you, as you said, they're working through some tweaks? Would you like to see any tweaks, or do you like it just as it is right now?
To be honest with you, I like it as it is. Just let it ride. Guys are going to get used to it. It's been in the minor leagues for a while, so as prospects are coming up, they're already used to it. Prospects are used to it, so like, they're not going to have any adjustment. It's brand new for these guys. There's going to be a little bit of adjustment, but once they get the adjustment down to it, I don't think a single player is going to complain about it. Actually, I haven't really heard many players complain about it.
No.
To be quite honest with you.
Honestly, they haven't. And you heard like Manny Machado was the quote I remember. He's just like, I'm going to be starting a lot of counts down 0-1 just because he wants to take his time. But like, he's also a good enough hitter to start with a strike against him.
Yeah.
And, you know, the players will adjust. I do think the pitch clock is a good thing, but it would not shock me in the slightest if we get a week or two into the season and MLB is like, oh, we're going to add 5 seconds to the pitch clock, just because we've seen them make last second changes before. and they're not shy about doing that. I'm not saying they will or won't, but it wouldn't surprise me
if they did. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was your take on Max's gamesmanship?
I love it.
I did like too. Quick it was pitches, the most Max Scherzer thing ever.
I will say it. Quick pitches are very dangerous, and like I don't want to be like a nerd saying that, but the umpire did call a balk on it, so you know he couldn't weaponize it to that much. But I do like him trying to test out in the spring training. Who cares? But I do like him to trying to like test out and mess with the hitter, because that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So good stuff. Obviously the pitch clock is here to stay, and I think we're all in agreement it's a good thing. It's just a matter of, is it going to stay as its current iteration, or will it actually be tweaked down the line and whatnot? But anyways, let's get into our AL Central division preview, as we did before, covering all five teams in each division. Talk about team MVPs, talk about team Cy Youngs, and some dark horse X factor players to watch as we enter the season. And we'll also touch on when us Nats fans can expect our Nats to play these teams throughout the season, because now another rule change, every team plays every other team. It's not just a rotating division cycle anymore. So the Nats will play all other 29 teams this year, which is pretty cool. I think it's a good thing. All right, let's kick it off with your 2022 division champions, and that is the Cleveland Guardians, a record of 92-70 last year. The Guardians, one, probably don't get enough credit. Like, we think about the Rays and what they've been able to do. Guardians, absolute factory. They just don't really have anything to show for it. They've only had one pennant and, not much other postseason success, but they haven't had like a full-fledged rebuild that you would have expected them to go through, because they pump out talent, and specifically pitching. That's definitely the strength of this team. Last year, you know, if we're talking team MVP, team Cy Young, honestly, they probably had like two MVPs. And honestly, it's probably not who you expect if you had to pick one. Jose Ramirez, everyone knows. But Andrés Giménez had a 7.4 WAR last year. Absolute stud. I'll be very interested to see if he can repeat it. But they seem to have found an answer at second base with Andrés Giménez. And then Cy Young, it's probably still Shane Bieber, is one of the best pitchers in the league. Worse sounds bad, but he was still very good last year. But they have a couple of guys in that rotation that can absolutely bring it. What are your guys' thoughts on the Guardians this year?
You want to go first, Ryan? You want me
to? I was like sitting here playing roulette. I was like, I don't know if Amanda's going.
Pull the trigger.
And since you insist, I'll go. I don't think the AL Central is going to be as bad this year as people expect. It's actually a quite interesting division, which hasn't been said about the AL Central in quite some time. I like the Guardians this year. If there is any team in this division who is going to be able to make a run in the playoffs and shock some teams, it's the Guardians. And the reason why it's shocked some teams, even though that they are loaded, it's just the AL East and the AL West has some far better teams. Mm-hmm. But the Guardians roster is rather good.
Solid.
You already talked about Shane Bieber. I do not think he's the best pitcher in that rotation anymore. Shane Bieber is very good. I think Tristan McKenzie finally figured it out last year, and he's going to get even better. So they have a very good 1-2 punch with Bieber and McKenzie. The back end of the bullpen, they have arguably the second best reliever in the game and Emmanuel Clase. And then also the rest of that bullpen is looking rather solid. And a dark horse candidate, which I don't really know if you count as a dark horse, the signing of Josh Bell isn't talked about enough.
Yep.
The lineup had its issues last year.
Mm-hmm.
We know, like, Jose Ramirez is the most underrated player in baseball. He's one of the best hitters in baseball. Now they got a pretty good bat behind them who's going to hit behind them every single day. If Josh Bell can do what he's done when he's hot and be a legit power threat, that completely changes that middle of the lineup. And him and Ramirez can make some serious noise. They'll win over 90 games again, and they will be a very, very tough draw for whoever they get in the first round of the playoffs.
Agreed. Amanda, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I agree with that. I think Bell is a bigger signing than for the Guardians than maybe he would have been for some other teams, just because I think other than Ramirez, they didn't really have another sort of power threat as much. And I love the idea of him hitting cleanup. I think that's going to be a really big, I'm not getting them at 90 wins. I think I've got them. Let me look at my notes I made. I think 87, 86, 87 wins. I don't know. It seems like they've been good for a while. It's just that it never seems to quite work out for them.
Yeah. They don't have much to show for it, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They just always seem to come up short, you know, when you get to the end of the season and you're like, oh, are they going to make a deep run? And then it just never really seems to happen. I saw some really interesting stats when I was looking at, you know, like, who was I going to pick to win the AL Central? And one of my favorites, see where I put my notes here. The Guardians last year were 17-7 in games that entered the ninth inning tied. And they had 7 walk-offs and 40 comeback wins. And I think that is just so cool. Like, that is a team that I know they've, you know, they're not exactly the same team as they were last year.
Got a hammer in the bullpen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's basically what I was going to bring up. Like, that bullpen is unreal. And Ryan mentioned Emmanuel Class A. But, like, James Karinchak is probably the best non-closer reliever. And he could probably close for 27 other teams and be the best pitcher in their bullpen. And that's not even the only other guy they have. So, that great stat, Amanda, but it doesn't surprise me in the slightest.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those where that kind of like the eyeball test was, you know, like, wow, they really do well in like come from behind. And you sort of have that in your mind. But when you actually see those stats, they're pretty eye popping. Like, I think this is a really good team. And it's interesting. I don't think any team in the AL Central is going to go to the playoffs except the team that wins the division. So it's going to be a dogfight. But I do think it's going to be the Guardians at the end of the day.
Agreed.
I think they're going to repeat as the Central winners.
Agreed. Who's your dark horse? Which lefty?
I didn't go entirely on the lefties this time, but Oscar Gonzalez.
Damn you.
Is that who you picked?
Yeah, but then my backup was Tristan McKenzie.
Oh, yeah. Well, sorry.
Continue.
About that.
I'll find another one.
All right. Let me pull up my notes here. I looked at a lot of players on this team because there's a lot of interesting guys. You know, there's young, and they're so young. As I really dug down on the roster on this team, it's like, God, this is a young team. I think they were the youngest team in baseball last year.
Yes, they were.
And I don't know if they're going to be the youngest this year again, but they're going to be damn close. Gonzalez batted. So he didn't go for a lot of power last year. He was an interesting one because when you look at his, you know, he was a rookie. He didn't hit much. He hit for average, but not for power early in the season. And then he started hitting. He only hit 11, but he really kind of came into it as the season wore on, which, you know, you expect with a guy who's really going against major league pitching for the first time. But he batted 329 before his first home run. So while people are expecting him to hit for power, it was interesting to see how he was hitting for average. And the guy is 6'4" and 230 pounds. And he hit for quite a lot of power when he was in AA and AAA. So I think he's my dark horse. I think if he continues to improve and he can be the kind of guy that he was looking like he was going to be in AAA, that he can really make a difference for this club.
Yeah, that's a great pick. Obviously, that was going to be my pick. So I have to say great pick there. I will pivot and go Stephen Kwan. Not as much of a dark horse. I think a lot of people or at least know the name Stephen Kwan. Last year, his rookie year, he had the hottest start in all of baseball. He was hitting like 4-something through several weeks of the season. Obviously cooled off. That's not a sustainable average to go over 162 games, but his final numbers were still solid. 5.5 WAR, 298 batting average. His on-base percentage was 373. Gold Glove winner, 19 stolen bases, like really just a solid table setter. He doesn't hit a lot of home runs, but I mean, when you kind of are so well-rounded that, you know, you kind of don't need to hit home runs. Obviously home runs would be great, but like he does so much other stuff well that he's just the perfect complement and kind of the perfect embodiment of that Guardians lineup. They're not going to be super flashy with, you know, 40 home runs and 120 RBIs or anything like that, but they're all very well-rounded and they all do like what they do so well that, you know, they're dangerous. They are dangerous. As Ryan said earlier, they're just a tough matchup, you know, for anyone. So I think Stephen Kwan is kind of like a, like I said, an embodiment of that Guardians team. As far as the Guardians versus the Nats go, the Nats will actually see the Guardians early on in the season as Cleveland is coming to town April 14th through the 16th. So that'll be fun to see for Nats fans if you decide to go to that game. All right, moving on to the next team in the division. We're talking about the Chicago White Sox.
Did we get Ryan's take on the his dark horse?
Yeah, he said Tristan McKenzie.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so now you can't. Now you okay? So I had Stephen Kwan as my other one too. That's funny.
We all right. That's why I had to pivot twice because you guys took each one of mine. Them both. That's what I get for letting you guys go first and being nice. All right, now we're talking about the Chicago White Sox. The White Sox are not quite an enigma. Might not be the best word, but I thought they were going to be so much better than they have been over the past couple of years with, you know, the aggressive moves they've made, with the seeming development they've had in some of their pitchers and young guys. It does seem like the injury bug has gotten to them several times. But then I kind of fully jumped ship when they hired Tony La Russa. I just thought that was complete wrong move for where that team was.
It's a weird choice for a team full of young guys.
Yeah, and obviously they agree with Tony La Russa no longer being the manager. I believe he kind of stepped down, but it was more so a polite firing. I don't even know who their manager is now. I should probably look that up. But anyways.
Griffle.
I have no idea who that is. Anyways, the Chicago White Sox, 81-81 last year. I mean, just the epitome of mediocrity. They have the potential, but it's just a matter of can they put it all together. This year, I would say no, but the bones are there. They have really attractive young players that can perform very well and have performed very well in the past. Again, it's been more injury or just growing pains with a lot of the young guys, but again, the bones are there and they do tend to develop prospects pretty well. If you're talking MVP Cy Young, I think it's pretty clear cut. Obviously there's other guys that could challenge, but Robert, I don't know how you pronounce his last name, and Dylan Cease, like two of the best players at their respective positions in baseball. So again, the bones are there, but the White Sox have been and probably will be the you know, epitome of mediocrity going forward. But Ryan, what are your thoughts on the White Sox?
Another interesting team here. I just want to point out that last year, my Cy Young prediction was Dylan Cease.
You were very close. Very close. Came
second. Just saying. Just saying.
Make it on the record.
Another interesting team. They got rid of Tony La Russa. He stepped aside. That might be the best thing that ever happened to them. They have a new coaching staff coming in. And it's just an interesting time for a team that is in the middle of their championship window, but has – a lot of question marks. They lost Jose Abreu. That hurts. They did sign Benny Biceps. Their bullpen kind of took a hit, losing Liam Hendricks, but there were some issues there towards the end. They brought in Mike Clevinger. He's off to a dynamite start on the new team. Just don't Google. Do Google Liam Hendricks. Yeah. Criminal issues right now.
Hendricks. Mike Clevinger.
Oh, no, sorry. Mike Clevinger.
Liam Hendricks has something completely different going
on. Liam Hendricks catching strays over here. Yeah.
Liam Hendricks, do not sue me. so they are very interesting. I don't know. They're just interesting. Like, their biggest thing right now, and it's such a cop-out, but my dark horse for this team is health. Can they be healthy? Because they haven't been healthy in a long time. When they're healthy, this lineup is good. Tim Anderson, leadoff hitter, 300 hitter, 20 home runs, 25 home run guy for a shortstop. Elite, Luis Robert, real deal. I absolutely love him. Eloy Jimenez, Yoan Moncada, love him. Benny Biceps, he's decent. Just there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I just don't like him, but his number is always decent. The rotation after Cease is very interesting. Can Lucas Giolito bounce back? Will they have Mike Clevenger this year? Michael Kopech, can he figure things out? Lance Lynn, Porkchop, you know, he's just there. It's just very, very interesting. And with a new coaching staff, I don't know if that is going to be a transition year for them while they get things situated, or can this coaching staff have them hit the ground running? I don't know. So I think they're going to be back towards 500 again, just because there's a lot of question marks that I just
going don't know. More like a same ish record as last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking a little more like maybe 84-ish wins, so not significantly different than last year. But you're right, you know, the thing with Mike Clevenger, it does look like, I mean, baseball's not going to suspend him. So unless something legal sidelines him, he's going to play. So, you know, Giolito's a question mark. I don't know what to expect from him, but I completely agree with you, Ryan, that it's really health, because if they're healthy, they look like a much more, they look like a pretty dangerous team. But they were such a disappointment last year. I don't remember what I picked them to win last year, but I just felt all year like, wow, they really underperformed what I was expecting. Their new manager is Pedro, is it Griffol? I don't know how to say it. He's a first-year manager. I can't remember where they hired him from. But, you know, first-year manager, I don't know. I never really have high hopes for first-year managers, but maybe he'll – you know, I think it'll be an improvement, and maybe he'll be a better fit for this roster than Tony La Russa. My dark horse for them is, you mentioned him, Nick, Yoan Moncada. I think he's a guy where he's one of those, he was not healthy last year, and his last really good year was in 2019. But if he can even perform close to what he did then, and it does look like he's healthy, he's given some interviews from spring training talking about how good he feels and how well he's prepared. And the new manager seems to really like him. He's had really complimentary things to say. So, you know, maybe he's going to give him an opportunity to play more. He was injured last year right at the end of spring training, and then he didn't come back till May, then was right on the IL again in June, and then again in August. So he really barely played, and he only hit 212. So it was definitely not a good year. But he's, the way he's talking and the way he's performed in the past, I think that if he can perform anything close to that, he'll be a really important piece of this team. And he's also a switch hitter, and you know, with no shifts this year, I think he was shifted when he hit from the left. He was shifted against over 78% of his at bats. So, you know, he hit for considerably higher weighted on base. This is one of those where I looked at that stat again, like we talked about in the last episode, is his weighted on base into the shift was 233 from the left side, and it was 334. You know, an average on that is somewhere around 320-ish. So it's above average. It's not, you know, like world beating or anything, but you know, if he can be above average, that would be a big improvement from what he did last year. And I think he could be an important depth piece.
Yeah, I like that. I like both your dark horses. I completely agree with Moncada. Like, he has the ceiling to get there. It's just a matter of, can he sustain it? And health, yeah, absolutely. Like, it might be a cop-out in some people's eyes, but it's true. Like, they've, on eye test, have been one of the more injured teams in baseball, and two key contributors as well. My dark horse is Kendall Graveman. For no other reason than the fact that they're going to be without Liam Hendricks for a time. It's cancer, right? Liam Hendricks has cancer.
Yes.
Oh my God, I completely forgot about that.
Yeah. So that's
and why. And you accused him of domestic abuse.
Yeah.
Bad guy, me.
Yeah. So they're going to be without him.
It's the revenge of John Lester. I'm just throwing that
for an extended period of time. So they're going to need someone to step up in that bullpen. And they do have good arms in that bullpen. I just picked Kendall Graveman because he has closing experience. He's had a couple solid years the past couple seasons with the Mariners and Astros. So he might get the first crack at the closer job, filling in. But regardless, he's a vet on a young team, on a young bullpen staff that he'll lead them, and he can build some value for himself should they sell at the deadline or anything like that if they're not in contention. So the Nationals will, I'm trying to see if this is home or away. I believe they're at home. We'll see the White Sox September 18th to the 20th. So a little bit later in the year. We'll see if we catch them healthy or if they're struck by the injury bug yet again. All right, moving on to the next team in the division. That is the Minnesota Twins. Similar to the White Sox, you know, they kind of go up and down, but if you average it all out, they're pretty mediocre as well, always having around 500. Last year, 78 and 84. Talking MVP, Cy Young, MVP when he's healthy, Byron Buxton. Just absolutely electric. He always gets the Victor Robles comps, or Victor Robles always gets the Byron Buxton comps. If Victor Robles turns into anything close to Byron Buxton, I will eat a shoe. Like,
narrator, he's never going to turn into anything close to Byron Buxton.
Byron Buxton is electric. It's just, can he stay healthy? Which, I mean, I think he's been injured in every single season he's ever played. So that's a big if, but when he's on, he's must watch TV. Cy Young,
you don't think Correa, that wouldn't be your MVP?
Well, Correa is awesome. Like, you know, if you listen to our top shortstops in baseball, like, you heard my argument for Correa, and I think he's the most well-rounded shortstop in baseball. I think his Buxton's ceiling is higher, so that's why I'm going Buxton. And plus he's been there longer, so I think that team goes when Buxton goes.
Yeah,
that's kind of my, if you pick Correa, I would not argue, basically. As far as Cy Young goes, it's probably Joe Ryan, which seems crazy because, like, he's relatively new to the team and young and whatnot. But he's a solid pitcher. There's nothing wrong with Joe Ryan, but they do have an okay staff, Sonny Gray and some others there. I don't know what to expect from this team. It seems like every 2 to 3 years they have a playoff push and then they really suck, and then playoff push and then they really suck. So I don't really know what to expect, but like some other teams, they have the bones to compete. It's just a matter of, can they put it all together? Amanda, we'll start with you this time. What are your thoughts on the Twins?
Yeah, they are kind of a hard one to predict because they are so mediocre. I mean, I'm picking them to go a straight 500, 81 wins, which is actually a slight improvement over last year. Yeah, I don't think they have the juice to compete in their division, and I don't think I don't think they're gonna be able to put enough wins together to compete for the wild card. So I'm not picking them as a playoff team, but Buxton is not much of a deep dive, but he's actually my dark horse because of his health. He is one of those guys where like you said, his ceiling is immense, but he just never has been able to get there. He's apparently going to get used a lot as a DH. If you kind of read about, you know, how the manager's been talking about him, just to manage
Michael A. Taylor.
I know, right?
Yeah. I was hoping we could get through this without mentioning him.
Well, thanks, Ryan. Anyway, so Buxton is, I don't know, he's one of those guys where if he can put it together, that's why he's my dark horse. If he, like you said, if he goes, the team goes. They don't have a lot of other big, Correa, obviously, but beyond that, there's not a lot that kind of, you know, lights your hair on fire. But his numbers, and this is another one where I looked at these, how is the ban on the shift going to affect him? And he's a righty, so you don't think of it as much, but he was shifted on 78.8% of his at-bats last year, which was 301 at-bats. And when he was shifted against, his weighted on base was 312. And this is one of the most dramatic changes I've seen when I've been looking at these stats for a lot of players. When he's not shifted, or when the defense isn't shifted against him, his weighted on base is 517. Like, he could have a monster year at the plate if he can be healthy. So that to me is going to be super. That's the thing about the Twins I'm most interested in this year, is to see, can he be healthy? And if he is, I'm dying to see what his offensive numbers look like.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. My dark horse is Max Kepler. He's a guy. What's that?
Kepler.
He's a guy. No, here's a guy.
No, here's a guy.
Like, I feel like he should, this is such a cop-out, I feel like he should be better than he is. And I don't know if his 2019 season was just a product of the juice baseballs, as so many others experienced, mm-hmm. because that's really his outlier year. But that kind of makes him a dark horse, because if he has 36 home runs in the tank, like, that would be a dark horse. You know, that would be something you hope to get out of a player, you know, if you're trying to compete. Guy who only hit 9 home runs for you last year, if he can bump that up to 25 to 30, yeah, mm-hmm. that'd be pretty good. So I'm not saying I predict it. He probably had the worst year of his career last year, so at the very least he'll be a bounce back candidate. But he's someone who can contribute a lot to a team that, like I said before, has good bones, and they need performances from those kind of supplementary guys to really take them over the top.
You want to hear an interesting thing? As you were talking, I pulled up his numbers on the shift just to, because he's a lefty, and he was shifted on 90%, and he had a higher weighted on base when shifted than he did when not shifted last year, at least, which makes you wonder why the hell were people shifting. he was doing better. He had a 191 weighted on base without the shift and a 310 with it, which is still slightly below average even with it, but like way below average without. So that's a weird stat. I don't think I've seen very many where guys get shifted very often. And yeah, that's weird.
Makes me so happy that Amanda is now using WOBA. Like, you just Talk about character development. That makes me so happy.
This one fascinates me because I think I mentioned this in the last episode. The thing I am most interested in about MLB this entire season is how the shift ban affects offense, especially from lefties. Like, I'm fascinated by it. I cannot wait to see, because people have been talking for years and years and years about the shift and what it does, and does it work, and should they use it, and, you know, like, how does it affect hitters, and should they ban it? And now they finally have, and it's like, we're going to get a real life look at it, and I am just can't wait to see what the numbers look like next year when
I love it. I love it. I'm kind of in the same boat with you guys. My dark horse as well is Byron Buxton. When he's healthy, he's one of the best players in the league. It's just homeboy's never healthy. Mm-hmm. Like, my man's is never healthy, but if he is, this team and this lineup will be an issue, because I do love the lineup. Buxton, Correa, Polanco is a fantastic 1-2-3. Max Kepler, dude's got a great name, so he's automatically a little bit better. MLB banned the shift. They signed Joey Gallo, said, hey, no one shifted more than him. Let's do it. And then the Red Sox pulled the left fielder and put him in the shifted spot. Poor Joey Gallo. He can never escape the shift. I feel so bad for him. But I love the lineup. My question with this team is that rotations full of a bunch of guys who, if they were either your three pitcher in your rotation, you'd be so happy. I love Pablo Lopez. I think that's a fantastic move for them. He's not an ace. Sonny Gray, good, not an ace. Joe Ryan, good, not an ace. Tyler Mahle, Kenta Maeda, all those guys are threes. There's no ace. You need an ace. That rotation worries me a little bit. If things go right, I think they could push 87 wins. If things never go right in Major League Baseball, that's just life. So I think they're going to be closer to the 84 win range.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, I just realized when you mentioned Pablo Lopez and Joey Gallo that I should be mentioning the additions that each team has. But those are obviously two big ones for the Twins, and not to mention the whole receiving end of the Carlos Correa saga. And we don't have to dive into that, but
yeah, but man, that's the something we should talk about at some point. But God, that was weird.
Yeah,
we don't have to do it now. But
signed the most richest contracts in MLB history. But yeah, it'll certainly be interesting to see if the Twins can figure it out, because they made some like supplementary moves too, like Dylan Bundy, Michael Fulmer, and Kyle Farmer, and stuff like that. So it'll just be interesting to see if they can have one of those Twins years where they really make a push. On paper, no, but baseball isn't played on paper. Otherwise, you know, we would see very different results year to year. As far as the Nationals go, the Nats will visit the Twin Cities in April, the 21st through the 23rd. So we will see the Twins early in this year. And yeah, so let's, before we move on to the Tigers, let's pause 5 seconds to get a word from our sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours, like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more, made to order just the way you like it. Tim Hortons' new lunch deal. Simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal. Only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
All right, we are back and continuing on with the AL Central preview, talking about the Detroit Tigers. Last year, kind of a disappointing year for them, 66-96, coming off their impressive second half in 2021. I thought they would be much better last year. I didn't have them in a playoff spot or anything, but I certainly had them more competitive than 66 wins. If you're looking at their team, kind of uninspiring. I don't know if I'm alone in this opinion, but
I wouldn't call it kind of.
Yeah, I was like trying to pick an MVP and a Cy Young, and like I don't need them to be league MVP or Cy Young, but
even just for the team. You
know, representing the team well. And you know, that's not to say everyone on their team is a scrub, but like, dang, I would have thought after however many years they are into this rebuild that they would have a little bit more to show for it. But here they are, fourth place in a weak division, and we'll see where they go. But if I did have to pick an MVP, Eric Hase, I don't know how you say his last name. So many last names we don't know how to pronounce tonight. Their catcher. I kind of did him a little bit of disrespect there because he was very good last year. His numbers, I should have pulled them up so I can back up what I'm about to say. But he was very good last year. As I'm trying to stall, I misspelled his last name. Last year, 748 OPS, 44 RBIs, 14 home runs. He also plays left field, so kind of like split position. But he was a kind of an unexpected bright spot on the team. The last couple of years has been really solid for them, especially by catcher numbers. Really solid. I don't really know what else to say about this team because they're just so average. Like we thought the Twins were average and the White Sox were average, but
I don't think they're average.
No, I just mean like they're players. Like the Twins and White Sox at least had like Dylan Cease and Carlos Correa and Byron Buxton, but like the Tigers, man, they like I don't even know where to start with them. What are your guys' thoughts on the Tigers?
What do you think, Ryan? You want to go first this time? You want me to? I'll take it.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. So Miguel Cabrera is, I guess, the only thing that like I find super interesting. I'm picking them to finish last. I think maybe 70-ish wins, which would be an improvement over last year. But I don't know. I mean, it's funny. I remember, am I crazy or were people talking about possibly playoffs for them at the beginning of last season?
That you're not crazy because they finished 2021 so strong. And like we thought AJ Hinch was really going to turn the tide for the Tigers and like lead them somewhere, but 2022 was awful for them.
Yeah, I mean it was really awful. I mean they like barely avoided a 100 loss season, which is fine. I mean that happens. Obviously that's pretty much what they were predicting for the Nats this year. Like that happens with teams rebuilding, but you know it doesn't often happen for a team that people were talking about playoff aspirations. Like that is a massive underperformance. So I don't know this team, like I said, there's just not much going on here that's interesting to anybody who's not a Tigers fan. Riley Green is another player that I love players who play defense. Like, I mean, pardon the expression, like it's their job because it is, but he plays amazing defense. And I went back when we were, you know, I was looking at players to pick for the dark horse on this team and watching some of the clips from his defensive plays last year, the way he just lays himself out is awesome. So I like this kid. He is, I guess, like I said, he'll be my dark horse pick, I guess, because I couldn't really come up with anybody else who I thought. He didn't hit very well. His offense is not very impressive, but his defense is. So I think if he can even get to kind of be average or slightly above average at the plate, then he could be a kind of a spark plug. But this team's not going anywhere.
Ryan, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, Tigers are an interesting team. There are storylines there for them. It was an offseason kind of disappointment for fans. Fans wanted them to go out and be aggressive in the market. Ownership decided not to because they thought that they weren't ready after making some moves last year. But the most important things that the Tigers made last year is that they have a new coaching staff. They made some changes to the coaching staff. The coaching in Detroit was quite possibly the worst in the league, and that's not an over-exaggeration. Atrocious coaching. And also taking the fact that they made changes to Comerica as well, which is going to help because the Nicholas Castellanos effect, look what happened to him as soon as he left. That ballpark sucks. That ballpark is not very good to hitters. They made some changes for it as well. And surprisingly, they have some good depth. They've had a lot of guys graduate their farm system last couple of years, so their farm rank isn't very well. But what they do have is a lot of young guys who have good potential and didn't perform as best as they could. But the rotation might surprise. You got Eduardo Rodriguez, Spencer Turnbull, Tarik Skubal, Matthew Boyd, Michael Lorenzen, Matt Manning, Joey Wentz, Bo Brisket, Reese Olson. Pretty good names there. That is good depth, surprisingly, for the Detroit Tigers. The lineup is interesting as well. I do like the infield with Torkelson, Jonathan Scope, Javi Baez, Austin Meadows, Riley Green. I really like them as well. Of course, Miggy is there, but the biggest questions for them are going to be, is this coaching staff, somewhat complacent? And will the offensive changes to the ballpark help them in any way? If it does, this is a team that's going to be pushing 75 wins. If the ballpark still sucks and the coaching still sucks, we're going to see a lot of guys underperform still, which is unfortunate, and they're going to have a lot of questions to to figure out with a very long rebuild. But the pieces are there, and the Tigers are moving in the right direction, and that 75 win is very possible.
What do you think about you guys both? What do you think about Spencer Torkelson?
I'm glad you mentioned him because he's actually my dark horse.
Oh, okay.
Former number one overall pick in baseball. I think it was 2 years ago, 2020 maybe. But Spencer Torkelson has not had the hot start that many wish he would have had, and obviously that he wished he would have had. Actually got sent down after making his debut and being up for a little bit. Not a great feeling, I'm sure, and not a great inspiration for optimism for Tigers fans, but I don't think you should give up on Spencer Torkelson or stop believing in him. I think he will bounce back. I just rookies are and young players, they develop at their own pace. And even though he played college ball and even though he was the number one overall pick, there's nothing to say that he's going to be a Hall of Famer, that he's going to be the next Miguel Cabrera. Obviously, Miggy's a great person to learn from, but it doesn't mean it's going to all happen at once. And with the Tigers being a 20 or a 66 win team in 2022, like there's no pressure on him. And we've talked about this with the Nats. Like it's different when you're a 95 win team and you're making your debut and you have to fill a necessary role for a playoff team. When you're a 60 win team, or in the Nats case, like a 50 win team, you can allow some patience with your young guys. And I think that's what the Tigers really need to do with Spencer Torkelson, because obviously he's where they have a lot of their chips placed, for their future. So I think deal with the growing pains, reevaluate at the end of the year. That would be my advice. And I do think he will certainly be better than last year, because last year was pretty bad.
Yeah, he was a victim of Comerica last year.
Yeah, many people are victims of Comerica.
Like his batted
Class
ball
action
profile,
lawsuit.
literally, it's there. You can tell he's one like rather unlucky. He had a game last year where he went 0 for 4 and his softest hit ball was 105.5 off the
Oh,
bat.
I remember that. Yeah.
He went 0 for 4 with an expecting batting average of 850, 230, 640, 510. And that's 0 for 4.
Jeez.
Camerica takes a lot of souls. I really want to see what he does this year. He's just been unlucky.
Yeah, those stats are crazy.
Yeah.
Man, that must suck to feel like you're doing everything right and you just can't get any results.
That's why I like love advanced metrics like that. And I don't even know if exit velocity is that advanced of a metric anymore. But you know, it's almost like a better indication of success than some of these other stats. And, you know, at least gives you a reason to believe or still believe in Spencer Torkelson. Like I do think he will be fine. And to Ryan's point, the altered dimensions are like, they've altered them to help their home players. That's why you see, you know, Toronto doing it. And that's why you see Comerica doing it. And that's why you see a couple of other organizations altering their dimensions of parks that have been around forever because they want to help their team. Unless you're the Orioles, then I guess you don't like home runs to left field, but I guess the Orioles have sucked for so long. They don't want teams just automatically hitting home runs against them. But I do think he will certainly bounce back. As far as the Nats go, they will travel to Detroit. Can't read my handwriting. May 19th through 21st. I think I was starting to write April, but then I wrote May over it. So it was like April 19th through 21, but it's May 19th through 21. So kind of two evenly matched teams there will be facing off.
Basement battle.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Rounding out the AL Central is the Kansas City Royals. Last year, 65-97. I mentioned it off the top of the show, like kind of a interesting possible parallel to watch with the Royals. Obviously, they won the World Series in what, 16, 15, or was it 14, 15 that they went back to back?
14, 15. 16 was the Cubs.
Yeah. So they won in 15. They made it in 14. Since then has not been a great time for the Royals. They kind of sold out to win the World Series. Obviously they did that. That's great. And you know, they're paying for it now, which every team would make that trade. We said we would, and now we're paying for it. But the Royals certainly are, but I do think they're about to turn that corner. Like they might be basement dwellers, but I think they're like the Tigers, at least in your guys' mind, they will make a step up this year. They've had their top prospects debut. Now it's about getting them seasoning and really turning them into consistent contributors to their team. Words just kicking my ass tonight. If you're talking MVP, Bobby Witt, like whether he was the best player statistically or not, he's the new face of the franchise. That team goes if he goes. And had a really, really solid rookie campaign last year. I believe it was 2020, if I'm not mistaken. 20 home runs, 20 stolen bases. Before I like declare him that, I'm going to double check. Yeah, 20 home runs, 30 stolen bases. So he had a great rookie year. You need to see his on-base percentage bump up a little bit. But if it does, you're going to see his numbers go crazy. Cy Young, Brady Singer, like, not many people have heard of him. Had a very solid year last year, like a 3.2 ERA, 154 innings. They still got like the wackiest pitcher in baseball, Zach Greinke. Always entertaining to watch him and his, I don't know if you guys saw, the Dodgers have that prospect that with a fractured hand in his bone. So he's not swinging during spring training, but he's still getting at bats so he can track pitches. Zach Greinke being the goofball and wacky pitcher that he is, knew this. He goes like 93 down the middle, EFIS strike two, and then EFIS ball one, and then 92 down the middle. Like, just really entertaining to watch Zach Greinke. I mean, him going back to the Royals is just like such a fitting end to his career. But yeah, the Royals,
I like him.
Yeah, just an odd one. Mm-hmm. I respect that. What are your guys' thoughts on the Royals? Is this the year they kind of make the next step?
No, it is not.
And yeah, I was I was about to say, I was like, I disagree with everything you're saying right now, but Amanda, go ahead.
Well, goddamn.
No, it is not the year. I don't think that they put it all together. I mean, it's been a long rebuild. I mean, they won the World Series. It was 2015. And they, looking back, have not had a record over 500 since then. Like, that's rough. I mean, I feel bad being a Nats fan right now with the way our team has been since they won the World Series, but damn, that's rough stuff. I don't think they're going to be much better this year. I'm thinking around 70. I think they're going to be in their annual battle with the Tigers for last place in the Central. They do have a lot of really cool, really good young players. You mentioned Singer and Bobby Witt, obviously. I like Bobby Witt a lot because Witt is my maiden name, so no relation, but I'm always rooting for him. Singer is super interesting. He had a not great, not great 2021, but really strong last year. Let me see, 3.23 ERA and a 1.14 WHIP. So, you know, I guess he's their best starter, right? I mean, looking at their lineup, I'd say, or their rotation, I'd say he's their best.
Well, yeah, that's why I gave him the Cy Young.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but hit the Cy Young for them.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. All of these are two Cy Youngs. I'm not saying like
somebody. Yeah.
Spencer Turnbull is going to win the, you know, AL Cy Young or anything like that. But yes, continue.
Yeah, okay. And then my dark horse is Vinny Pascantino, who's not only is his name fun to say, but it's Italian Breakfast, which is a really weird nickname. I'm not sure.
It's my dark horse as well.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. He is a super interesting player. Young guy, 2022. He is, when you look at, again, I'm looking at these shift stats. He is at the top of the list for the Royals for who gets shifted against the most. So we're likely to see his WOBA without the shift is 422, which is, you know, pretty fantastic. Anything over 400 is pretty fantastic. So I'm real interested to see how things go for him coming up. But I think, you know, he's a guy who, if he has I guess I said right up front, no, this is not a year where they, you know, make a playoff run or anything. But I do think, as you mentioned, Nick, in the opening of this, that they are finally starting to see some of the fruits of this rebuild. Like, you're starting to see some of these young prospects get into the big leagues and start to make an impact. So
yeah, that's more what I meant by taking the next step than like playoff push. But yes.
Yeah. He was really good. Pascantino was really good last year. I don't feel like it got a lot of attention outside of Kansas City. But you know, he struggled a bit when he first started. Looks like his average when he first came up in the first couple of months was like 200 or under 200. But after he got used to things, you know, he was hitting 328 in the final 50-ish games of the season with the 406 on base. And with young guys, especially rookies in their first year in the majors, I really like to kind of split the season in half and look at what do they do at the beginning and what do they do at the end, because that can be a huge difference when people are adjusting to a new level, not just at the majors, but even when you go from double A, triple A. You know, if you look at them, those seasons split up, you can sometimes see a pretty obvious difference as they settle into a new level. And I think that was the case with him. And if he can maintain what he was doing in the second half of last year and even improve upon it, he's going to be really good. He's going to be a real important player for them.
Agreed. And he had a breakout year in a short amount of time from a first baseman on a last place team and didn't require performance enhancing drugs to do so. Just a little shot there. Ryan, what are your thoughts on the Royals?
Yeah, if I'm a Royals fan, I'm just happy that the Chiefs exist. Like, I just don't get what this team's doing. Like, nothing they do makes sense. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of hope either. Like, you're looking at a team that's drafted the top five for, I don't know, five of the last 7 years, and they don't even have a top 15 farm system. And yeah, like, Bobby Witt and Singer graduated, but that was only two guys. And especially where they are consistently drafting, this farm system needs to be a lot better. And they don't really have a lot of good minor league depth either. So I look at this team, I try to figure out what they're doing. I don't get it. Like, I completely do not get
it. Kind of feels like a perpetual rebuild that isn't getting anywhere.
It's so weird. Like, yeah, they added 25 million AAV to their team this year. That's great. But then you look who they spent it on, and you're like, oh, like outside of my cousin Vinny, outside of Bobby, outside of Singer, there's nothing else to really root for or watch or be excited about. There's not really great reinforcements coming in the minor leagues. They're stuck with Hunter Dozier, who's had back-to-back Michael Franco worthy seasons on the Nationals. It's just weird. Like, I just don't get what they're doing. That, like, we've had people from MLB Pipeline come on and talk about how the Nats farm system should be better than it is. And like, some people do have the Nats farm system ranked around 10. The Royals have been rebuilding for 7 years and they still don't have a top 15 farm system. It just doesn't.
Is it just bad drafting? I wonder what it is that's keeping them from, you know, when you're
I think it's bad everything.
Picking that high for that many years. It's crazy to think that you're not hitting more picks. I mean, I know that baseball more than any other sport, you know, sometimes they just don't pan out. Even first round picks, they don't always pan out and they take forever to get to the majors. Like, all of that having been said, it just seems crazy that their farm system isn't ranked higher at this point.
It's just weird. Like, we've seen teams really, really commit to the tank, like the Baltimore Orioles did. But the Baltimore Orioles were building a absolute machine of a hitting lab in the minors and also a pitching lab because they got some pretty good pitching prospects. But the Royals just, it isn't there. It's another lost year for the Royals, in my opinion. They're going to be picking in the top five again because they're a small market team. So they're going to be able to be in that spot. It's just bad. It's just bad days. Just enjoy Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce because that's all the city's got.
Do you have a dark horse or is the dark horse the Chiefs?
The dark horse is Patrick Mahomes comes on over and saves your franchise. No, well,
he did play baseball and I think he's a part owner of the Royals. So he could be.
Did he draft it?
He's going to be like, maybe you know what? Yeah. This team sucks. I'm taking over. I'm better than you. And he's going to bring Travis Kelce and all of his other friends who are freak athletes on that team. And they're just going to figure it out.
Probably better than what they got now.
I would pay good money to see that.
Yeah. You can pay good money, but you would have to go to Kansas City because that's where the Nationals are going May 26th to the 28th. And that will round. Well, I guess their last series would be against the White Sox in September, but they face most of the AL Central in April and May. But that does it for our AL Central wrap up preview. All that good stuff. Next episode, we'll be tackling the AL West and some exciting teams out there. But that pretty much does it for this episode. You guys got anything else before we head out?
I don't think so. There's not much. Victor Robles got hurt. Should we talk about that maybe?
Nah, I'm good.
The report was good, though.
Fair enough. But I got nothing.
It's spring training. Like, if he has to have surgery, then it'll be breaking news. But like, that everyone knows how I feel about Victor Robles. If he misses a month of the year, it means nothing to this team. Like, sorry, like, just this team's gonna be
like, I don't like to see anybody get hurt. And right. Best wishes to him. Obviously, you know, I hope it's nothing serious, and if it is, I hope he recovers quickly and completely. Sure. But I don't think it's gonna have a great big impact on the team.
That's my point. It's like, this team's going to be exactly the same with or without Victor Robles. So it is what it is. Wish him the best. And hopefully it's not anything major, but you know, it is what it is with the Nats right now. If you can't tell,
there's going to be a lot of that this season. It is what it is.
Yeah. It's all it can be. Ryan, you got anything before we head out?
I just thank God every day that I don't live in Kansas City.
There you go. Oh, and watch the World Baseball Classic, people.
Watch the World Baseball Classic. USA plays this weekend against Britain. This one's personal.
Oh, man. Quick thoughts on who wins the World Baseball Classic?
This is a good time to plug the website. There was an article on the website today with the picks from the crew on who they think wins. I'm the homer. I'm picking the good old US of A.
I'm sticking with the DR. Like, I know they've lost some guys, but still.
I know. I went with the DR at first just because even with losing dudes, that lineup just absolutely insane. So it's a pitching staff.
Crazy good.
But I want to go to Japan. They have an absolute three-headed monster in that rotation.
Their pitching is,
Their pitching is insane. I would like to see Japan win just because that country is so baseball crazy, and it would be awesome to see the reaction.
Did you see 36 million people watch the team like practice?
Seriously? I did not see that. That's insane.
36 million people watched the exhibition game that Team Japan had before.
Yeah, I know that everybody calls baseball.
Rob Manfred would have blacked it out.
I know. He would have. But yeah, like America writ large does not love baseball as much as Japan loves baseball.
Yeah. So,
amen.
Yeah.
So that would be fun to see. Yep. So we've got three picks, one for Japan, one for US, and one for Dominican Republic.
And then like the Venezuela will win it all or something, you know.
Right. So we'll all be wrong.
Yeah, exactly. All right. But that does it. Like I said, next episode, we'll be covering the AL West. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Half Street High Heat for all the latest updates. Be sure to check out halfstreethighheat.com. Monty and the crew pumping out stuff every single day. Follow Half Street High Heat on YouTube. Trey pumping out videos several times a week. He is in mid-season form himself. And follow
best shape of his life, people.
Nope, not doing that. And follow us all on Twitter at @awhite7877 for Amanda, at @weareallshack for Ryan, and at @thecoachmoose for myself. We appreciate you listening. And in the meantime, let's go Nats. And I was going to say let's go USA, but in my case, let's go DR. In Ryan's case, let's go Japan. So let's go Nats.
There's a new breeze blowing off the banks of the Potomac. A new team's mowing down the ranks of their opponents. The Nationals are smashing balls, so that the commentator who has the calls has passed the wall to see you later. Let's go Nats. We've got a game to play. We're gonna win today. Let's go. By the early light of dawn, well, you can see they're running scared, cause the kinds of bombs we're launching are bursting in the air. Tell the Library of Congress that they might not want to look, cause we're putting curly W's in every book. Let's go Nats. We've got a game to play. We're gonna win today. Let's go.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.